Thanks, Laura, for that story. Big Brothers Big Sisters is about developing friendships. I'm not sure they always have that drama or resistance involved, as we just heard about. But it can be challenging to intentionally form a new relationship. And that's what I've learned over the last few years, and that's what Mike is involved with setting up and tending in his work. So just going to read.
Good morning. I should point this up. It's good to be here with all of you. Yes, we all need friends. And definitely the kids that I work with aren't usually like the bear. They usually enjoy having company and want a friend. But thank you, Kevin, for the invitation. Appreciate being able to come here and to talk to you this morning. And as he mentioned, he is a big brother with our program. He does a great job mentoring, yes, as he said, Michael, who is an interesting boy who, has grown up with a single mom and can be sometimes hard to know and understand. He sometimes likes to keep to himself, and that can be a challenge for sure, but I have seen some neat little changes happening through the mentorship that Kevin's provided, so it's been really neat to watch. So before Big Brothers and Big Sisters, I was a youth pastor for a while in Morden, and I enjoyed that a lot. And after a time there, about 12 years, it was time to have a little bit of a change. So wasn't sure where God was going to lead me. And eventually he led me to Big Brothers and Big Sisters. So it seems as though he has placed a call in my life to work with children and youth, for whatever reason that is. But and I don't know how familiar you are about Big Brothers and Big Sisters. We're not a faith-based organization per se, but the work we do, I believe, is a great way, a great opportunity for the local church to get involved in the community and to mentor these kids who come from difficult circumstances, typically single-parent homes, and have usually experienced a lot of difficulties and trauma sometimes in their life. I was told as a church you've been focusing on the topic of transformation this fall. And I do believe that mentorship is one avenue to see incredible personal transformation in the lives of people. I want to tell you a little bit of story, a bit of background about Big Brothers and Big Sisters. So in 1903, there was a businessman in Cincinnati. His name is Irvin Westheimer. And he offered his friendship to a little boy who he saw behind his house in the alleyway going through a garbage can. He learned that this boy was fatherless, and he suspected there was many more. So he enlisted the help of many of his friends and business associates to develop friendships with boys that they had found. Now, completely independent of Irvin Westheimer, there was another man in New York City, actually, named Ernest Cloutier, and he worked in children's court. And he was a clerk there, and going through the court records, he discovered that there was a distinct correlation between boys who were in the court system and fatherless homes. He discovered that most of these boys did not have fathers. So he decided that maybe a male influence would be a good way to curb this behavior and keep them out of the court system. So he enlisted the help of his church, actually, his men's group. And there was about, I believe it was about 40 men who decided to start this program that he called Big Brothers at the time. And that was the first organization in North America. Now in 1913, the organization came north into Canada, and that's where it started, in Toronto, in Canada. This little bit of history, I feel, gives a bit of a, it reveals the heart behind the organization, I think. It's a heart that breaks for children in need. Children who need many things, material resources, stability, healthy relationships, and most of all, I think, children who are in need of God. If we love Jesus and he's a part of our lives, well, this truth, this light shines brightly through us, just as we sang in that song, Paper Lanterns, right? And children who see us will be drawn to it. Not just children, but everyone who see us will be drawn to it. There was a boy, his name was Bill. I didn't know Bill. But he grew up in the 1930s, and he was African American. He grew up in Louisiana. And so, as you might well know, he had a lot of troubles in his life. He had to deal with issues of racism, of course. He was bullied, he was threatened, he was humiliated. And he grew up poor, living in project houses. His mother passed away at the age of 12. And so his father had to work a lot to provide for his family. Bill was athletic, and he enjoyed sports. He did track and field, was a good runner. And he thought he would enjoy basketball, so he tried out for the junior high team and was promptly cut. Maybe we've been there before, I know I have, trying out for a sports team that you think you'd enjoy and, well, you don't make it. That's life, right? Tried again in high school and was cut. Bill was a perfect candidate for a mentor, I believe. He was down and out. He was growing up in a situation that was difficult. Who was going to step up and help this boy? Well, eventually, oddly enough, the high school basketball coach decided to help him. And he started to mentor him. And it was then that Bill started to really flourish. And I'm going to leave that story for now. We'll pick it up a little later on. We'll see what happened to Bill. So what exactly is mentoring? Well, we often hear about it, but maybe we don't have it explained to us. But a mentor, according to the dictionary, is basically a trusted friend, a listening ear, maybe a counselor or a guide, a tutor or a coach. And that's what mentoring is. I actually believe that mentoring goes much further back. And it's just a modern adaptation of the idea of discipleship. Although the Bible doesn't really use the word, it references a lot of successful mentoring relationships. We see Moses and Joshua, Elijah and Elisha, Naomi and Ruth, Barnabas and Paul. We see the ultimate example, of course, of Jesus and his disciples. Mentoring in biblical times was a way of life. It was built into their culture. Now, we can probably say the primary way of passing on skills, passing on faith, in Old Testament times in particular, was through the home. The parents were responsible for doing that. We read this in Deuteronomy 6. Verse 4 to 9, known as the Shema, it says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. These commandments I give to you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them upon your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them to your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates." So passing on faith was a family responsibility. I do believe it went a lot broader in their culture as well. It wasn't just the family, but it was a community thing. This changed a little bit in the New Testament with the introduction of synagogue. Synagogue was a place not only of worship, but a gathering and of teaching as well, of education. And at the age of 6, children would be taught. They would memorize Torah, which is the first 5 books of the Bible. That's quite a feat, to memorize the first 5 books. Usually they started with Leviticus, believe it or not. I can't say I've memorized Leviticus. At the age of 10, they would begin to study the oral law or the explanation of Torah that the teachers interpreted. And then by age 13 or 14, the best of the best went to a house of study. And there they would learn under a particular teacher or rabbi, as we might call them. Now, there were also, at that time, teachers and prophets that would roam the countryside. This was Jesus' method, roaming the countryside, teaching people who would be receptive to their message. And this is how Jesus found his disciples. This is how Jesus found his mentees, we could call them, the people who he mentored. Sometimes people ask the question, well, why did Jesus call disciples? And I mean, there's many answers we could give. I believe he was not only training other people, but giving us a model to follow. A model of disciple making, or in our modern terms, a model of mentorship. When he calls his first disciples, I think it gives us a little bit of an insight as to what his purpose was. In Matthew 4, verse 19, he says, "Come and follow me," Jesus said, "and I will send you out to fish for people." And at once they left their nets and followed him. So Jesus called his disciples so they could learn from him, so they could make more disciples, essentially. For 2 to 3 years or so, Jesus' disciples followed him wherever he went, observing what he did, participating in his ministry. And this discipleship was training so that Jesus' disciples would become more like him. And part of being like him was for them to then go out and make more disciples. Multiplication. And we read the passage, Kevin read the passage for us, the Great Commission, as we call it, Jesus' final words, some of his final words to his disciples, asking them to go out and make disciples. The Great Commission is Jesus' invitation to his followers, then and today, to be participants in God's plan of transformation in our world today, I believe. To the men that he mentored, he told them to mentor others. And this is Jesus' request of us, his command to us. He calls us to follow his example and to make disciples, to mentor others as we are going through our life. First John, 2 verses 3 to 6 says this: "We know that we have come to know him if we keep his commands. Whoever says that I know him, but does not do what he commands, is a liar, and the truth is not in that person. But if anyone obeys his word, love for God is truly made complete in them. This is how we know we are in him. Whoever claims to live in him must live as Jesus did." So in a way, discipleship and mentorship isn't really an option for us as Christians. The Great Commission is grammatically imperative. Go and make disciples. So Jesus provides us with an example that he wants us to follow. We are to baptize and teach and make disciples. Now, I realize some people get a little antsy or anxious about this idea of teaching others. It's not necessarily a common or popular idea. But in reality, we're all teachers, right? I mean, as I scan the crowd here today, a lot of you truly are teachers by profession, and that's great. But we are all teachers in a way, right? If not by our words, then by our actions. We teach each other, we teach other people every day. This is mentorship, essentially. It's not that complicated, really. It takes time, yes, and commitment, for sure. The Apostle Paul, in his letter to the Corinthians in chapter 11, verse 1, he says, "Follow my example as I follow the example of Christ." This may be another reason why we are fearful to mentor somebody. It's because in mentoring, we are leading another life. And that is a big responsibility. But it is a responsibility. I mean, rightly, we don't take it lightly. But it is such a privilege and such an honor to do that any risk, I think, that we may encounter is worth it. Now, when I look over this church here, this church family, I see great potential. Great potential to transform our city. Everyone has something to offer. Many here, we all have gleaned experiences through our life. Some of you have more experience than others, and that's a good thing. Each of us here has an experience in life and also a relationship with God that we can pass on to someone. Now, how you pass it on and to whom is up to you and God and your life. But I do believe this is something that is required of us, something that God wants us to do. And there are countless opportunities to do this. As we all know, the need is great. There's lots and lots of children and youth in our community who need help. In fact, between Winkler, Morden, and the surrounding area that we serve as an organization, there's over 600 single-parent homes at this point. So there's lots. And that's just single-parent homes, never mind the kids who have two parents but still are going through tough times. The secret to transformation and the secret to seeing change is mentorship and discipleship. So, you know, if you're a father or mother, if you have kids, I pray that you're actively mentoring your children. Maybe there's a neighbor that you live next to that could use some help, that could use a friend. I had a neighbor once, a little while back, who was very much like Bear in this story. No visitors allowed. But you know, over time, thankfully, we were able to wear him down and he became a friend. Maybe there's an immigrant family that you know of that could use some help. Winkler has a lot of new families that have come from other countries. Or maybe there's a child you know who has trouble making friends who could use your encouragement. And maybe, just maybe, you'd be interested in following Kevin's example and being a big brother or a big sister in this community. Well, to end, I'd like to share just a few stories of transformation that I've been able to be a privilege to be a part of, some through our program and some not. So the first one, there's a little brother in our in-school mentoring program who's a great little kid, lots of fun, but always in trouble. He visited the principal's office pretty much daily. And the school was concerned about him, so they asked me if I had someone who could mentor this young man. Eventually I found somebody, and so we matched them. And about 2 weeks later, I got a call from the school saying, how impressed they were, how incredible the transformation was in this guy's life. Because they hadn't seen him in the principal's office lately. He hadn't gotten into trouble lately. And this match went for 2.5 years. And from they tell me about a week and a half after he started his match, he hadn't stepped foot for the rest of the time into the principal's office. He was a great kid, and all he needed was a little bit of help, a little bit of encouragement, someone to listen to him, and someone who would make him feel important and cared for. There was another boy who's still in our program. He witnessed his father passing away at a very young age in a really terrible farming accident. It happened right in front of him. He was 5. And so as you can tell, or as you can guess, he had a lot of hard feelings about that, a lot of depression, a lot of trauma to deal with. So we matched him with a big brother. And they've been together now 6 years, and he is doing fantastic. His big brother had walked with him through many things, times of depression, times of questioning why God would allow this to happen. And his big brother was there to listen and to encourage him and to be a consistent support. And he is a happy, healthy teenager right now who's going through grade 11, and he's doing great. There's a new program we just started last year, group mentoring for girls. It's called Go Girls. It's a great little program. And last year, there was a girl in the group who, she's in junior high and was dealing with cyberbullying. And you probably have heard a lot about that. It's a big issue these days with Facebook and all social media. And she was brave enough to tell her mentor about this. And her mentor was able to walk with her through that issue. And the group was a big support, too. They huddled around her, became really close as friends. And as a result, this girl could shrug off these effects of this cyberbullying and make good choices and be set on the right path instead of taking her anger out in a negative way. So wonderful stories, and I could go on, but I won't for the sake of time, of how lives can be transformed through discipleship, through mentorship. Now, I promised we'd get back to Bill, so we'll do that now. I don't know if you remember who Bill was. At the beginning, he was the man, young man who had grown up in the 30s who was bullied because he was of a different race. He was cut from the basketball team and didn't really feel like he was worth anything. Well, Bill eventually did make his high school basketball team. He graduated from high school, which was a big feat for that day. And he got a scholarship to the University of San Francisco. So he actually went on to university. During his time at university, he led his school to 2 championships, including a stretch of 55 consecutive wins. He actually went on to play in the NBA with the Boston Celtics and won 11 championships during his 13 years playing for them. He was a 5-time MVP and a 12-time All-Star. And to top this all off, he won a Olympic gold medal in 1956. So some of you may not have heard of Bill Russell before today, but Bill, along with Henri Richard of the Montreal Canadiens, you may have heard of him, they hold the record for the most championships won by an athlete in North America. But Bill would have never gotten to that point in his life without his mentor and high school coach. Bill Russell survived many racist comments and acts all because of his mentor. And without his mentor, he would not have achieved that success, as I said. Not all of the people, the kids, the youth that we mentor will be like Bill Russell. And not all of them need to be. Not at all. To see a young boy just not getting into trouble, what a huge reward. That's fantastic. God is working in our world, and he has invited us to be part of his mission. He is the sent and sending God. From the beginning of time, he has been pursuing his people, right? Going out to them. And now he has asked us to do the same, to go out and make disciples. It's a call for all of us to join him. And it is up to you how you answer that call. But I know together we can build the kingdom. We can start something that's really going to transform the lives in our community, the lives of children and youth and adults today. Thanks.
Thank you. I wonder, it'd be interesting to hear from various people here if you've been a mentor or been mentored in some way. You might want to think about that or maybe even share that in a couple minutes when we have some sharing time. Thanks so much for being here and sharing your passion and a glimpse of your work. We do see you in the paper from time to time with different events around the organization, but it's really good to have you share with us. Thanks so much. Number 62 in the green book is a response. Christ is the world in which we move. Christ are the folk we're summoned to love. I think very applicable to what we've just heard. Dave and Don are going to lead us through this one.